Well, a little bit after one, so why don't I go ahead and I'd love to welcome everybody here, and good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on today's call. Let's talk about transportation. You need access to carts for today's call. You can go to the APRI website at www.april-rural.org. and follow the link on the homepage. If you have trouble accessing it or have any questions during our call, you can email me at mary.olson, O-L-S-O-N, at mso.ump.edu. I can send you the link or help you troubleshoot. Today's call will be recorded thanks to Bill Cochran and Skill, and the audio recording and transcripts for this call and all of our calls will be available online at our website under the IL Conversations tab following it. During today's conversation, if you would like to add to the topic from your experience or ask questions, you can press star 2 on your phone to raise your hand so that I can make your line live. Once your question has been answered, please press star 2 again to lower your hand. When I unmute your line, the moderator will say your line has been unmuted. Please note that this means you're ready to ask your question or your comment. Also, please remember to evaluate our conversation on our website following the call under the IL Conversations tab. This IL Conversation is presented by the IELNet, which is operated by the Independent Living Research Utilization Program in partnership with APRIL and NICOL. Support for this IELTS conversation is provided by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Community Living. No official endorsements of the Department of Health and Human Services should be inferred. Now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce some of your presenters. So first, we have Joan O'Keefe, and she has been with Southeast Alaska Independent Living, Inc., SAILS, for nearly 20 years, the first 5 years in the Outdoor Recreation and Community Access, or ORCA, program, and the last 14-plus years as Executive Director. Joan is the Chair of the Alaska Silk and is a Governor-appointed member of the Alaska Community and Public Transportation Advisory Board. SAILS has been partnering with a taxi company in Juneau, Alaska, for over a decade to provide on-demand accessible transportation made more affordable through a discount voucher program. Using a different model, SAIL is working with local government to draft an ADA taxi ordinance. Joan lives in Juneau with her husband, Yappy Dog Marbles. So today we also have with us Melba. And Melba Heinrich is a native of Idaho, living her entire life in the southern region. She has been at the Twin Falls Office of Living Independence Network Corporation, LINC, for over 24 years and is the director. She's a board member on the Idaho Statewide Independent Living Council and also on the APRIL Board. Mel has served on a variety of local and statewide work groups and committees. She operates and supervises the only purchase of service accessible transportation program in the state, which serves well over 1,200 people every year. 4 years ago, this transportation program was cited in the U.S. Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee as an example of a cost-effective, consumer-friendly collaboration among multiple providers. And we also have a special guest today who's going to be introducing our topic, that's Tim Sheehan, and he is the current president of the APRIL Board, and he runs our advocacy committee. Tim, I didn't prepare a biography on you, but I just feel like you don't need a huge introduction. But with that being said, would you guys mind taking it away?
Thank you, Mary. This is Tim Sheehan from Wisconsin, and welcome, transit advocates all across the nation, for what I hope will be a lively and engaging conversation about an issue that vexes most people with disabilities wherever they live, but especially in rural areas, and that's access to affordable, accessible transit options to enhance their lives. I want to spend a couple of minutes just setting the framework for the conversation and just sort of bring folks up to speed of where we're at at a national level regarding transit. In order to do that, I want to spend a couple minutes talking about where we've been. I think as everyone on this call will recall, those of us who have been doing system change work around transit policy for 15 years or so, worked really hard to get a surface transportation bill reauthorized. And the efforts of that resulted in MAP 21. And a diverse group of advocates, both from the disability community and from the transit community and from the equity community, worked and pushed Congress really hard to make some improvements around transportation policy. And many of those improvements were included in MAP 21. And following the expiration of MAP 21, Congress actually drafted, funded, and went to the President to sign a new multi-year surface transportation bill known as the FAST Act, or Fix America Surface Transportation Act of 2015. Some improvements on MAP 21 were included in the FAST Act, one of which I'll highlight in a moment. But I want to sort of encapsulate where we're at in terms of transit programs that affect people with disabilities of all ages. And that is the main section that really is the focus of our work, and that is Section 5310, which is a formula grant program available to states. Under the previous surface transportation bill, prior to MAP 21 and the FAST Act, programs that serve primarily elders and people with disabilities fell under a category called the New Freedom Program. And in that program, organizations were able to apply to set up transit programs that went beyond the ADA or that were new programs designed to serve people with disabilities. So under the FAST Act, those series of eligible activities were rolled into Section 5310. So they included all of the New Freedom projects that were out there. It also rolled in capital and operating expenses for transit programs. It also included mobility management as both a capital and an operating allowable expense, and also folded into what had been known as the Transportation Alternatives Program to do things like to make sidewalks accessible to transit hubs, for example, and a whole series of other enhancements, community enhancements, that can be funded through 5310. It also did a couple of other things. There was a program that had existed for a long time called Job Access and Reverse Commute Projects, which are employment-related transit initiatives. That program was divided between two sections, one being the small urban transit program and the other being the rural transit program. Those programs now receive those funds and must continue, figure out a way to continue those job access reverse commute activities within their grant. When the FAST Act was signed by the President, it was a five-year bill. And if you go to FTA's website and look at the Federal Transit Administration's website and look at the fact sheets around Section 5310, you'll notice that there's actually increased funding in each of the 5 years of the bill, which ends in 2020. That means, at least in theory, that there should be more money available coming into our states as the years of the FAST Act continue. Here's something that I really want folks to put into their mixed masters and talk about. At your state level. If you're not engaged with your state DOT on what they're doing with 5310, you should be. And the issue centers around The eligible activities under Section 5310, a few of which I just highlighted, are things that states can fund, but they're not required to fund. And so if your state is using 5310 funds for its traditional purposes, which is offsetting the cost of vehicles, and only that, it would be a good time to have a dialogue with them about all the other cool things that they can do with 5310, including fund transportation programs like we're going to hear about today, operated by nonprofits such as Centers for Independent Living. Another huge, what I consider to be a huge change, a positive change, that happened in the FAST Act that's never happened before, as far as I know and as far as I can determine. In order to draw down either capital funds or operating funds, you have to have a local match in your grant application. For operating, that's a 50-50 match. So you got to have a dollar for every dollar of federal money you're going to spend. And for capital projects, the federal share is 80%. But so you got to come up with 20% in local match. There's always been some flexibility about what match can be, but it had to be 20% or 50%, depending on what category you were applying for or receiving funds for. And those could not be federal dollars. You can't match federal dollars with federal dollars. Well, in the FAST Act, that changed. So in Section 5310, you can now use federal dollars as long as they're not either FTA or USDOT dollars. You can use federal dollars as the local match share of either your capital project or your operating expense project. That makes a big, big difference in the communities that we serve. And so I want folks to note that, and I want them to highlight that for their state USDOT or state DOT folks, whoever handles the formula grant program at the state level and doles out the dollars, that federal dollars can now be used as match as long as they're not FTA dollars or USDOT dollars. So the rest of the day today, in our time together, I want Joan and Melva and all of us to have a dialogue about what's currently happening, what are the cool things that are happening, what roles can centers play in affecting transit for people of all ages and all disabilities in their states. And so that's where we're here, and I'm not going to talk anymore, and I'm going to let these folks kick off the show, Mary.
Why don't we move right in? And I think, Melba, are you ready to tell us a little bit more about some of the cool programs you're doing?
Yes, thank you. This is Melba Heinrich, and I'm happy to be here, and I want to thank Mary and Tim for allowing me to be here. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I appreciate April and all the folks that make this call possible so we can talk about transportation issues. And I'm going to talk today about our voucher program that I run in Twin Falls, Idaho. It's called the Purchase a Service Program. But first, I want to make one correction. I'm the director in Twin Falls, but Roger Howard is our executive director. I wouldn't want him to think I was trying to take all his credit. I've been working in the independent living world for 24 years, and since the beginning of my career, transportation has been the number one issue for people with disabilities. Necessary to maintaining their independence in the community, and that's why we continue this program, even when we have times of funding cuts and when match money is hard to find. And because too many people with disabilities that keep them from driving would go without seeing a doctor or going without getting their hair done or even visiting their friend. We run our program with 5310 money, which is for elderly individuals and individuals with disabilities. The goal of our program is to improve mobility for older people and people with disabilities. Like Tim said, eligible capital projects under 5310 include funding vehicle acquisition. And it also is for contracted services for nonprofit organizations that serve elders and people with disabilities. We've run this program now for 25 years. It started out as a small program where you could purchase some script money and use with a local taxi company. At that time, we only had one provider, and we ran it that way for about 10 years, and then we changed the program to where the customer no longer had to purchase the script money, and we could pay the cap companies direct, and the customer only had to put out money when they paid a small copay when they actually used the taxi company. Our program covers a four-county area with almost 6,000 square miles and a population of about 150,000 people. 81,000 of those people live in Twin Falls County, leaving the 69,000 in the other three counties we provide services in. How it works is a person with a disability or a senior fills out a very basic application that they have, and they also have to have a verification of disability filled out by a licensed professional. This was a new requirement by the Idaho Department of Transportation this year. We also capture the disability and demographic information for our center's annual report. With this information, a person is given a card with their assigned number on it, and they can use it with the local public transportation provider or with local taxis who have contracted with us. At this time, we only have two taxis contracted with us, but we have had as many as six at one time. Our public transportation provider runs a demand response service, so he only runs 5 days a week and 12 hours a day. So we need to contract with those other providers so folks can have services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. When a person uses the public transportation provider, the ride is free to the participant, and our grant pays $5 for that ride. If the participant uses a taxi, we pay $5 for the ride, and the participant pays the remainder. That amount depends on how many miles the participant travels. It's also a 20% match, as Tim mentioned earlier, that is required for the 5310. To come up with the matching funds, we have gone to each of the counties and cities and asked for assistance with those match funds, and this has been met with minimal success. So we've also applied for local grants, such as through banks and businesses that have charitable components associated with their businesses. We also have been very fortunate to have a couple fairly large private donations. And over the years, we've used the FTA funds, such as 5316 and 17, which had an administrative component to it. But right now, the way our grant is set up, we do not have any administrative funds. So Link pays for all the costs, which include salaries, postage, printing, along with other costs, which include fringe benefits. When there's been a shortfall in our program, Link has used unrestricted funds to cover those gaps. These unrestricted revenues are primarily funds that we've accumulated above and beyond the operation of our personal assistance program. Our program's had a great flux in how much money we've received each year. As an example, in 2010, we spent $91,000 and provided 17,000 rides. 2011, we had $219,000 with 33,000 rides. And in 2012, we dropped back $93,000 and provided 20,000 rides. In 2013 and 14, we averaged $175,000 with 30,000 rides. Then in 2015, we jumped up to $260,000 and provided 43,000 rides. Then this year, we dropped to $50,000 and have provided so far about 10,000 rides. Differences are because there have been years that we had the 5316 and 17 grant dollars to use, and now those dollars are rolled into 5310 and 11 grants, and our state allocates them differently than they have in the past. So you can see, at least in our state, the funding has not been steady. But we continue to provide the service at some level because, as it states on the April website, most people with disabilities who live in rural America continue to be isolated, frustrated, and cut off from going to work or school, visiting family and friends, participating in community life, or attending to health needs because of lack of adequate transportation. And we truly believe our program helps to alleviate some of those frustrations and provides a much-needed service. So that's our service in a nutshell, and I appreciate you letting me spend some time with you today.
Great. Thank you, Malva. I think we discussed moving right into Joan and then opening it up for everybody for a conversation, just in case, you know, sometimes another speaker answers a question in your mind, but, you know, hold on to them and we will be opening up the call to everybody soon. But let's go ahead and hear from Joan. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mary and Tim and Melva. I, too, appreciate this opportunity to talk about transportation. So how we got started in my shop at Southeast Alaska Independent Living or SAIL is that consumers came to us frustrated with no affordable, accessible, on-demand transportation options. We advocated with the taxi companies for a couple years to buy their own ramp or lift-equipped taxis, and we didn't have any success with that. So in 2003, we became aware of 5310 funding. And as Tim said, it's available in every state. And I, too, encourage folks to talk to your state DOTs, if you're not already doing so, about accessing those funds, because the states do have a lot of flexibility on how they use and disperse those funds. One of the requirements of 5310 is coordination and community coordinated plans. So in 2003, we led the charge to put together a coalition including public transit, paratransit, nonprofit social service agencies, and local government. And we called the group the Juno Coordinated Transportation Coalition. And I drafted the first community coordinated plan. And by doing so, Juno and the agencies here in our town were eligible to apply for DOT grants. So in 2004, we applied for a 5310 grant for the 80% of the cost of a lift-equipped taxi and $15,000 for a voucher program to make the rides more affordable. We asked our local government if they would cover the 20% match, about $8,500, and they did. We put out an RFP to secure a taxi vendor, and we asked folks from DOT and our local coalition to review the applications and score them, but we only had one applicant. So we entered into a contract with that company, which we still have today. For the voucher program, we started with plastic poker chips with printed information on them. Eligible users of the voucher program are people with disabilities and folks 60 years of age and older. We compute an average cost per ride in our grant application, which includes all the SIL costs, all our administrative costs, and any other costs such as purchasing in the first iteration our plastic tokens. The 20% match for the vouchers came from a combination of a 20% donation from the taxi company and rider contributions of 40 cents on the dollar. In 2007, the local government realized they needed to step up as the lead agency for the coordinated coalition, and they spearheaded a more complete community transit plan, which was adopted in 2008. That same year, with encouragement from our consumers, we spearheaded an effort in Ketchikan, a community of about 13,000 folks in the southern part of our region, which led to the formation of the Revilla Island Coordinated Transportation Coalition down there. In 2008, we applied for a second taxi in Juneau because every system needs a backup. This time, the Juneau legislative delegation provided the 20% match. By then, we had more than 200 non-duplicated riders on the voucher program. We switched from the plastic poker chips to write-in-the-rain paper vouchers because we live in a rainforest here. Each voucher had a distinct number that could be tracked. We advocated with DOT at that time to let us make the vouchers available to only folks who were lower to middle income to get the ride, the assistance where it was most needed. That was a little bit of an advocacy battle, but we got there, and with DOT permission, we instituted income eligibility standards of 200% of poverty, but made it on the honor system so that riders don't have to provide the documentation and we don't have to do that extra work, and DOT was fine with that. Over the years, we've gotten additional vehicles, where the Juno delegation has provided the match, and in the last couple iterations where the taxi vendor paid for the 20% vehicle match. In 2011, our local, our state DOT was concerned that folks who were not eligible for the program might use the vouchers. So using 5310 money, they made available to us a technology grant. And with that funding, we switched to smart cards with picture ID and started a contract with a taxi software program. Our taxi vendor continued to pay that 20% match for the technology grant. In 2011, consumers were voicing their need for affordable, accessible, on-demand transportation, and so we wrote a grant for a ramp-equipped vehicle in Ketchikan using, again, 5310 funds, and we were awarded that grant. We put out an RFP, and only one taxi company responded. They paid the 20% match and for the vehicle. Unfortunately, the vehicle that we chose for Ketchikan was recalled. There was a lot of problems with it, as well as problems with our vendor. So after less than a year, that particular iteration of the program ended. Then in 2013, we've continued to do the voucher program, originally starting with $15,000 a year. We were up to about $65,000 a year in federal funds by 2013. In 2015, we put out a new RFP in Juneau for a vendor. This time we had two vendors apply. We had a proposal evaluation committee with the Coordinated Transportation Group, the Department of Transportation, and local government. I think wisely our agency was not even on the PEC. And if we get to lessons learned, I'll hit on why we did that. We put out a RFP in Ketchikan for a taxi vendor again, and we had no takers. The cab companies complained that they needed additional permits and that their drivers didn't want to provide accessible rides because those people take too long to serve. Of course, comments like that get my dander and probably everybody on the calls up. So it was time for a new strategy. Where we are now, so in FY17, learning that we need to have backup, always have a backup, we have a second taxi applied for and awarded 80% of that funding, and we're about at $70,000 of voucher funds. But back to Ketchikan on where we are now, they have a taxi system that's a medallion system. Probably some folks on the call have that, where your community local government regulates that every taxi vehicle must have a permit, and permits are limited, so each permit has a monetary value. We advocated with the city council for our first choice, and that was that they mandate that all taxi companies have ADA vehicles, accessible vehicles within 3 years. Unfortunately, that was a non-starter. We couldn't get the city council to make this mandate. The compromise, just this summer, we met with the city manager, the city attorney, and some city council members, and they've agreed to draft an ordinance for new permits exclusively for accessible taxis and include incentives for companies who provide 24/7 accessible service. Incentives will include extra permits for non-accessible vehicles to sweeten the deal and specific prime parking locations downtown near the cruise ship docks exclusively for accessible taxis. In Juneau, we advocated with the city government in the latest iteration of the Coordinated Transportation Plan to include a priority to encourage accessible taxis, and the city did adopt that. We've also asked them to look into limiting airport and ferry service to taxi companies that have ADA taxis available 24/7. We were unsuccessful in getting that adopted into the plan. but they did make a commitment to again to establishing a minimum percentage of accessible taxis. Lastly, you know, where we are going, I must say it's my personal goal to stop writing grants for taxis. I don't think it's sustainable. I think that our advocacy needs to go to to industry incentives so commercial vendors provide their own accessible vehicles. In the short run, that may not be the option. Maybe it's 5310 and doing what we're doing and have been doing and purchasing and vehicles and leasing them to cab companies. But I think the real meat is going to come when we have incentives in place for taxi companies to do it on their own. So in Ketchikan, we're going to start with this ADA ordinance that has been currently drafted. Our goal is to get it passed this winter and then improve upon it. In Juneau, our goal is to work with local government this year to draft an ADA taxi ordinance that includes some of those incentives that I mentioned earlier. So I feel like we've come a long way, but there's a heck of a long ways left to go. So that's my overview, and thanks for listening.
Great. Thank you again. Wow, I feel like we've just heard so much information, and I just want to remind folks again that if you have questions for our speakers, or if you would like to add to the conversation at this point, I know we've got a couple of folks specifically on the line who are going to add to the conversation. And to do that, if you can press *2 on your phone, and that raises your hand if you have a question. And then what will happen is I will unmute your line, and the moderator will tell you when your line is unmuted, and she will say your line has been unmuted, and just so you know, that's your prompt to go ahead and ask your question.
Mary?
So let's go ahead and open it up to the line. So again, if you press *2, you can raise your hand, or those in the cart can just type in your question. And while we're waiting for folks to kind of get their questions going, maybe Joel, if you could share a little bit about, Joel is somebody in our audience who I'm going to share just a little bit about what they're doing as well.
Mary?
Yeah.
This is Tim. Could I just steal a couple of minutes of Joel's time to make a shameless plug, if I might? For those of you who are on the call, like transit, want to advocate for transit, want to know where policy stands at a national level and what's happening in our states all across America, April does have a transportation advocacy committee, and it meets monthly on the fourth Monday of the month at 1 p.m. Central Time. So if you're interested in being up to speed on what's happening and what's the dialogue in states with state DOTs, where are we at with national policy, hear great stories like we just heard from Joan and Melba, I would encourage you all to consider joining April's Transportation Advocacy Committee, which is chaired by our executive director, Billy Altum. And you can contact the April office directly and get more information and put your name in the hat to join this vibrant group of some of the most knowledgeable transit advocates in the nation. So that's my plug.
Thank you, Tim. I always welcome plugs for some of the work that we're doing because I think we do have a very we're lucky that our membership is just so intelligent on these issues and that they are willing to share it with all of us. Yeah. And again, if you want to ask any questions to Tim about that advocacy committee or others, or for Melba or Joan, you can press *2 to raise your hand. Go ahead, Joel, if you'd like to start while we're waiting for hopefully some questions to queue up.
Sure. So my name is Joel Peden. I work for the Montana Independent Living Project based out of Helena, Montana. And I'll just real quick, on a statewide basis, one of the things that we were able to accomplish in the last legislative session was to change the funding source for our TransAid program statewide, our senior and people with disabilities transportation funding. And kind of unique, what we did is we we moved it from there was a fee that was tied to every vehicle registration in the state, and because of permanent registration established about 8 years ago, that fund was dwindling down to just a couple $100,000 a year. In the last session, we were able to actually tie it to our rental car tax of the state of Montana, and so we now receive about 25% of the rental car tax used for that funding, and it immediately tripled what the fund was back up to around $800,000, and hopefully it's going to remain sustainable and grow. So that's one thing that we've done recently on a statewide basis. Locally within our service area, we just, as of last Thursday, were able to implement our own version of an evening and weekend voucher taxi program here in Helena. We collaborated with the local taxi. Didn't have a lot of luck with local government for funding, so we actually wrote a grant, received a $10,000 grant that will help offset the difference between the dollar copay per ride and what the taxi company is charging. So we just rolled that out. To supply the van, similar, it sounds like other communities and other centers have found the taxi companies aren't quite ready to step up and purchase their own accessible vehicle. About 2 years ago, we applied for 5310 funding. We supplied the 20% match, and after two long years of wait, about 4 weeks ago, received a Dodge Caravan with a ramp that we then are in turn leasing to the taxi company for their use. So we've just gone through the first weekend. It's just starting to pick up steam. Kind of excited about that. At the same time, our service area also includes Bozeman, Montana, and about 6 weeks ago, we met with the provider in Bozeman, along with the taxi company down there, and are in the works on getting a similar program going in Bozeman. The nice thing is that we do have a little more cooperation with the lead agency and such down there. That's kind of just in the works. The big thing we're finding, obviously, is funding and how do we make that work. We had talked with our Department of Transportation about 3 months ago to try to figure out how do we use some, how do we get them to help out with and designate some of this 5310 money for the program. And of course, at this point, they're not interested. So my goal is to shame them into participation by starting to make these two programs successful. Take that route in it in the meantime. We're just getting going. As a state, we have one accessible taxi in the entire state, and that's in Helena right now. But it's better than the zero that we had 7 days ago.
Thank you, Joel, for sharing that. So, yeah, if anybody has questions, please press star 2 to raise your hand. And then when I unmute you, she will tell you your line has been unmuted. I do have one question from the cart before we move to our next online speaker, or excuse me, phone speaker. The question is anyone aware of AB 650 in California. Do any of our speakers have an answer for Daniel?
Mary, this is Tim. I don't have an answer for Daniel on AB 650, but if Daniel can shoot either myself or the April office or Billy an email with the questions around that, we'll be happy to dig up some information and share it back.
Great, thank you. I will type him our email address. All right. Well, some comments now. I'm excited. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Judy Chelge. I'm calling from Corpus Christi, Texas. Hi. With the Coastal Bend Center for Independent Living Mobility Options Program. I've got all kinds of questions for the speakers, but I thought what I might do, because I'm hearing a common thread about taxis in rural areas, and I didn't hear anything about TNCs. And that's kind of a leading question, because we know probably those of us who understand the Uber and the Lyft phenomena is pretty much geared to the large urban areas because of the high density of population. That's where the money is. That's where that particular model works well. And I want to tell you, though, and I'm very excited about this. We've been doing mobility options since 2010. And what we did was modeled a program, after, with DARP funding back then, modeled after the Consumer Directed April Voucher Program. And that has morphed into being an absolutely wonderful project that 5310 can support. So it's something that provides the mobility management as one of the pieces, and the other piece is purchase of services. We've learned ever since the get-go you don't have to own the asset to provide the service. So we purchase services from existing transportation, primarily private, some rural, but there's not a lot of participation by rural because they feel as though we are competing with them, even though we fill gaps. But anyway, TxDOT is a tremendous partner to us and others still in Texas. I'm going to tell you real quickly that over $1 million in 5310 funding this last go-round was approved by TxDOT, and that represents ARSL, Coastal Bend Center, Disability in Action, Mounting Horizons, and Panhandle Independent Living Services. And we all have different programs. Mobility management is in several of them. Voucher type, purchase of service, travel training are some of the areas that the different centers in Texas are doing with TxDOT with the 5310 funds that they're getting. But what I'm, to circle back to the TNC question, we are absolutely excited about a new project that was funded by TxDOT, a 2-year planning and demonstration through the coordinated call, first time we applied for any of that money, and we actually were encouraged by TxDOT to do this. A group out of Nebraska, that's obviously pretty rural, like some of the rest of you, has developed an app for real-time on-demand transportation, specifically for rural areas. They've gotten some federal funding to get that started up in Nebraska. They're going to start their demonstration phase. Well, we've had a managed care organization approach them and say, we need you in Texas. TxDOT said, talk to Judy Telge at CIVSO. We did. We put together a grant application, and we are going to plan for, in 1 year, how we're going to get this into the rural areas here in South Texas, and then a full year of demonstration as to how this might work in a rural area. So there's a lot of interest throughout the country. Already have a lot of requests for how this is going to work. And by the way, our partner, their service is the Liberty Service, and they're a for-profit. And what we're finding is these partnerships, then we basically have a public-private partnership The partnership is with Liberty's product through a Center for Independent Living and a funder, TxDOT, a public agency. So I would love very much to share more detail as that occurs throughout time, but I will tell you, if you want taxicabs to sit up and take notice, just bring in Uber or something like Uber, and yes, you'll have to fight on your hands, but the point is they are not the be-all and end-all, especially when they cannot provide accessibility.
Thank you, Judy, for sharing that. I think that's really great information. And I do have a couple of other books in the queue that I think that sparks some questions. But if you end up having more questions that you'd like to add or thoughts later, you know, please let us know. Hi, go ahead, please.
Hi, thanks. Teresa Torres from Everybody Counts. We're a center in Northwest Indiana. And one of the things I've enjoyed everyone's presentation, but one of the things that was particularly rewarding was to hear that some of the new Freedom Dollars were actually used for good things. We didn't have that experience in our community because of the fact that there were a lot of stipulations, you know, that you get input from stakeholders and priorities had to be established. None of that happened. In our community, in one county alone, we had 7 different public transit providers. 2 were demand response, 4 were fixed route and paratransit, and then another one nobody really quite understood. But I want to share where we went with that. So it wasn't so much a problem of funding or the availability of funding to serve people with disabilities as it was a lack of coordination, because with all of those systems, they only had this woman went to these 3 communities and didn't go outside of those 3 communities. So we have both urban and rural parts of our counties. And so you had a demand response service only serving this area. The other demand, so you couldn't get anywhere outside of a 2-town community. So there was a lot of waste of money. When the new Freedom Dollars were applied for, they were actually used to purchase non-accessible vehicles to go to a demand response service provider that already existed so that they could contract with ARC to provide rides to their clients only. And they said, well, those are members of the public as well. So it wasn't, the program wasn't really applied well. The upshot of all that, what we've been doing for our transit program is it's not so much about needing to provide the services, but to help to find a way for these transit providers to work more effectively. And so to do that, a lot of things happen, but the bottom line is now we have a coalition of the centers, ridership, we have a ridership council, and those transit providers, and it's now moving toward having a unified system. Because our feeling was, you know, rather than trying to reinvent the wheel, let's fix the one that we have. I'm excited about some of the things that I'm hearing you guys have been able to do. We kind of had to go backdoor on it, but it's turned out to be a good thing, if that makes any sense.
I think it does make sense. How about
Mary, this is Tim.
Yeah, go ahead.
Teresa, thanks for that. Thanks for sharing that experience. And I think you heard from Joan, and it's certainly been our experience here in Wisconsin and at my center and a center just to the north that we collaborate with on our transportation program. And that's the idea of drawing together stakeholders around the conversation of coordination, right? And our lesson really was that's a key feature of what we do is we sort of created and ride herd, as Joan did up in her neck of the woods, the Regional Transportation Coordinating Council. That brings all stakeholders together, and then you can begin to have common conversations about gaps in service and the lack of need and how that can be addressed. And the transportation that we started providing more than a decade ago now was to address those gaps, right? Folks that otherwise would fall through the cracks, right? That's like, that's who we're going to serve. We're going to partner with all these other providers to meet the big needs. And so That's really the key. I'm glad you learned that lesson, and I'm glad it's starting to bear fruit.
Well, yeah, the awful thing is it took a federal lawsuit and 20 years of work, but the good thing is that people with disabilities in our community now, instead of just being the people for whom services need to be provided, they actually were instrumental in getting the transit agencies to work together. They hadn't even done that, so the commonality turned out to be the ridership, so we have a pretty strong ridership council that, as you said, formed a coalition with the transit providers, and that's been real effective, but the gap still exists, and our problem is we've been unable to access any of the funds to fill those gaps because of the process by which the funds were given out. In other words, there were supposed to be mechanisms in place to ensure that, you know, there were processes by which the recipients were identified and all of that, and it didn't happen. So I'm really encouraged by the fact that people were able to access the funds. I'm listening to the concept of the vouchers and all of those things, and I'll be bringing that to our coalition meeting next month.
The other thoughts around this conversation, we've got another question to come in. I want to make sure that
my name's Carol Riley from Ames.
Hi. Your mic is live now.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to introduce myself. My name is Carol Riley. I'm from Ames, Abilities in Motion, Reading, Pennsylvania. My question is, usually if trying to get to the doctors, and if it's a different county, usually you can't get to that county. If not just me, it's anybody else. And somebody else said earlier it does get frustrating if you can't get to a family member or anything like that. I do understand that. So what do you do on this part, though, especially with the transit as well, if they can send information to us as well for the, I'll give you the email for everybody. If you guys could send information, it would be greatly appreciated. The AIM is, the email is AOCMAC@abilitiesmotion.org. Can we go to that one more time?
I think that's all right. And you know what, Carol? If you would mind, you can send that information to me as well, Mary Olson, and I will put that up on the archived information page on the website if you want.
Okay.
But as far as your question, I'm not sure that any of our speakers have an answer about trying to get somebody to the doctor's office.
Well, it's like between like surgery or something like that from a different county. That's what I'm saying. But they can't, they have no family members or anything like that. Where do you go from this part?
Mary, this is Tim.
Hi, Tim.
I don't know specifically, but if the person you're referring to or consumers of your center, if they are on Medicaid, for example, there is an entitlement in Medicaid called non-emergency medical transportation, often referred to as NEMT. What the Medicaid rule basically says is if you're on Medicaid and you have a medical appointment, regardless of the geography, and it's an authorized service, the state must figure out a way to provide you that transportation to that medical appointment and back to your home, from your home to the appointment and from the appointment to your home. It's not an option, it's an entitlement. So if folks are on Medicaid and they're having that issue about doctor's appointments or medical-related appointments, they don't even have to be a doctor's appointment. It could be a trip to the pharmacy, for example. That needs to be brought to the state Medicaid director's attention. And they have to have a process to get folks to their medical appointments. It's a federal requirement. It's an entitlement under Medicaid, and they can't charge you for it.
Yeah, because it is my appointment, and it's a different county. It's in Lancaster County, and again, trying to get from Burke County to Lancaster, because again, they close at a certain time here in Burke. I understand and I respect that, but again, in my part, I can't drive and everything, so how do I get there if I don't have a family member or anything that can take me there? That's the situation. So you're saying, Tim, to look up, what was it again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so if you or any other person is on Medicaid, it's called non-emergency medical transportation, and states have to have a plan to get Medicaid folks to their appointments, and it can't be restricted by things like county boundaries or, you know, that kind of stuff. And that should be in your state Medicaid plan, how they're going to handle non-emergency medical transportation for Medicaid-eligible folks.
Well, another question is, like, I have Medicare. I did have Medicaid. I don't know why they took me off it. So I'm going to call them and find out what took place there, because, again, that's going to put me in a pickle.
Yeah, and again, you can email Mary, and she can forward it on to myself or to Billy. It sounds like there's some issues there that we might be able to have a conversation about offline.
What is the email, Tim, please, for Mary?
It is Mary, M-A-R-Y, dot Olson, O-L-S-O-N, as in Nancy, at M as in Mary, S as in Sam, O, dot U-M, as in Mary, T, as in Tom, dot E-D-U.
All right, says Mary, it says dot O-L-S-O-N.
Yep.
Okay, I just want to make sure I have it correctly.
Yeah, that is right. Go ahead and send your information. We will help do some research. And just so you know, you're not alone. Kathy Baker in the cart says, one of our problems is light carols, and we cover 15 counties in Georgia, and our consumers need to get not just to local offices, but also to Atlanta, which can sometimes be as much as 100 miles away.
Right.
And then Pam Auer says, in Pennsylvania, it's called the Medical Assistance Transportation Program. And then Kathy says that the non-emergency services where she is just require too long for notification, and some will not wait for a pickup. So it sounds like it is kind of an issue all around. So I'm glad that we're going to get you connected in, and we can get some information out.
I appreciate it, Mary. And another thing, if any of you all can send any information for the transit as well, that'd be greatly appreciated here.
Great.
All right. Thank you very much, y'all.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Goodbye.
We have a couple more questions in the queue. Excited. All right, go ahead, please. Your mic's live.
Hi, my name is Neil Ligon. I'm the executive director down at Life in Savannah. I really appreciate listening to this conversation. This is a conversation that I'm at the very, very, very beginning of. My board is interested in purchasing a van that is handicap accessible, that has lifts, that we can use for transportation in our area. We're not purely rural, but we definitely have elements. So I cover 11 counties, and some of our 11 counties are rural. But basically, I'm fairly new in my job, and I'm trying to kind of get my head around everything. But when they have questions about that, I would really appreciate it if somebody could kind of give me the starter kit for what resources I need to examine, and what people's experience has been starting these programs up, because I know that we will be starting from the ground floor.
This is Melba, and we have a manual that we developed. It's a little bit older, but I can send it to you, and you can gain from it what would help you, and just disregard the rest. If you'd like, I could send that to you.
That would be terrific, Mel, but I'd really appreciate that.
I'm not sure, Melba, if this would be appropriate or not, but we can also put it up on the website if you'd like, if it's something that you think would be a useful resource.
If you'd like, we can. Maybe give us a little time and we can update it and then put it out there.
Awesome. Thank you. I think that's great.
And Daniel, this is Tim again in Wisconsin. There are also some basic resources on the April website that you can access and look around and see if that might be helpful to you. The other part of it that you may want to do some research on is look at your Georgia DOT website and then look for Section 5310 and look at what they're doing with those dollars, because at a minimum, most states are using 5310 dollars for capital purchase of vehicles. And there'll be instructions there on the timing of the annual grants and who's eligible and how to apply and where to get technical assistance to apply. So do a little research. I would guess if you just Google Georgia DOT, would get you there. There's also a program through the Community Transportation Association of America, which is a national organization that has a vehicle purchase program through a vendor for ramp-equipped vans at a very discounted price. And they just announced that they still have some vans available, and they also have a financing package. So depending on what financial shape your center is in, that might be a way to get to go to purchase a vehicle that wouldn't come with all of the sort of government strings that go with purchasing vehicles through 5310.
Okay. Mary, this is Joel in Montana. I have a question for some of the other centers that are working with taxis.
Yeah,
we're
go ahead.
We're running into a huge issue liability insurance-wise. Like I said earlier, we purchased the van through 50, with 5310 money. We're leasing it to our local taxi company. He went to go put insurance on it, and his insurance tripled. Just by adding the van, he went from about $5,000 a year to $15,000 a year, for liability insurance. And that extra $10,000 was strictly to put, our van on his policy and offer, an accessible vehicle for rides. Anybody else dealing with that same issue?
This is Joan O'Keefe. Our taxi company here experienced something on maybe not as drastic as that, but he ended up working with his broker and looking at a number of different insurance options, and what he ended up doing is having the accessible vehicles on a separate policy than all of his other fleets, because he has, 25 vehicles or something. So all the non-accessible ones are on one policy, and then the accessible are on a different one. And after shopping around, he was able to find something that, yes, it was more expensive, but it wasn't nearly as bad as, when he had put it in as a package with all his other vehicles.
Right. Anybody else on the line having a similar issue or have any thoughts for Joel? I just want to do a little quick reminder again for folks. If you've got a question, go ahead and press *2 and then wait for the woman to prompt you. She'll say your line is now unmuted. At this time, I'm not seeing. Oh, one more.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
My name is Larry Roberts, and I'm calling from Ithaca, New York, which is in Tompkins County, New York. And I just wanted to encourage people, somebody was talking about getting involved or starting their coordinated planning process for transportation. I think that's a very important body to be part of. Our center, I'm calling from the Finger Lakes Independent Center. Our center has been involved in that process for a number of years, and we're sort of in a unique situation wherein the city of Ithaca is fairly urban, but we have a large rural area out side of the city. And we've had a paratransit system since 1978 and a pretty well-functioning fixed route system. But getting involved in whatever coordinated planning process is happening at your county level or any level is a really important place to be advocating, and also to get to know the transportation planners or that are in your counties or cities, and establishing good relationships with them is a way to go. I wanted to ask the presenters if they could talk a little bit about Uber and Lyft, because in New York the legislature decided this year not to allow Uber to expand outside of New York City, but I'm worried that it's going to, you know, they have some insurance issues, not really accessibility issue, and I think that's going to, the expansion of Uber into rural areas is going to have a huge impact on what taxi systems might exist. So I'm wondering what other people are doing to advocate around Uber accessibility or have thoughts about Uber. That's it.
Mary, this is Joel. So Uber in Montana just came on board August 1st. So we're kind of late to the party, and it's definitely rural. What we're finding in Helena, for instance, started out with strong, with almost a dozen Uber drivers. Our problem is because of a population and the distance that people have to travel, it's not profitable for an Uber driver. So what's happened is, as far as I know, we're down to zero Uber drivers. I mean, the app is still live in Helena, but there are no Uber drivers because they couldn't make any money. So, I mean, from a business standpoint, if you're in a rural area, I mean, it's really tough. I just don't see from a business economic side how somebody, you know, can drive for Uber and make it sustainable in rural areas. And not going to surprise me to see those same result in other rural areas around the country that there's just no way that they can stick around and stay in business and make any money driving for either Uber or Lyft.
Thanks, Joel. While others are raising their hands or not to add, I wanted to say from the CART, Kathy Baker said that in her area, in rural areas, she knows that liability is huge for Uber. She talked to one of her consumers who explored the possibility and said she just couldn't afford the initial investment. So it sounds a lot like what you're saying, Joel. Hi, did you have something to add on the Uber topic?
Hi, this is Judy Shanley, and I am one of the directors of the National Center for Mobility Management, which is funded by the Federal Transit Administration. And I just wanted to respond to what Larry had talked about in terms of involving yourselves in the coordinated planning process. Many communities have mobility management networks or systems, which are kind of like coordination entities where they look at all of the kinds of transportation resources and mobility options like volunteer driver programs, voucher programs that may be available in a community, and they coordinate all that. So along with looking into whether you can involve yourself in the coordinated planning process, check also to see whether your community has mobility management or there's a regional mobility management network. They would be a really good resource for you. And related to Uber and Lyft, they're called transportation network companies. We have on our website, we've started compiling examples from around the country about how transit agencies and human service organizations are partnering with Uber and Lyft and Bridge and others. And so it's all our information. We're a national TA center, so it's all for free. And I'll share the URL where you can access that information. We try to collect very diverse examples of how different mobility management strategies with, and one of them focuses on using Uber and Lyft. So I'm happy to share after with the conference planners, maybe our URL. It's the National Center for Mobility Management. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. We will definitely add that to the archive. Yeah, that's great information. And while we're on the subject of Uber, Kathy again from CART wanted to say that she talked to Uber, and they had their training program written in collaboration with the Australian Council for the Deaf. So she thought that was kudos. She thought that was a good deal for Uber in her area. And Kathy, maybe you could let me know. I'm not quite sure what area you're in. If you could let us know, I just think it'd be interesting. And it sounds like this whole topic of Uber like lit up the board. So did anybody, any of our other speakers have something to add on the question we had earlier on Uber before we move forward?
This is Nova, and in Twin Falls, we have not had much going on with Uber. But in our Boise area, which is a larger metropolitan area, they have it there. But I'm not sure how it's affecting the cab companies there. But we don't have it here in Twin.
And this is Joan O'Keefe, and we don't have Uber anywhere in Southeast Alaska at this point.
Thank you. All right, let's go back to the phones. And hi, did you have a question or a comment to share?
Yes, I do. I have a question. This is Carol Riley again from Reading, Pennsylvania with AIM. Number one, how would any disability person that was a veteran or is still a veteran, something happens at nighttime, how would they get to, like, the Lebanon Hospital in Lancaster and back to their home unless they have to stay overnight? How would they get there? Hello?
Hi. Yeah, do any of our speakers have any thoughts for Carol? If somebody has a disability and they're a veteran or they're still an active veteran, something happens at nighttime, how would they get to, say, a hospital in Lancaster and back to their home unless they have to stay overnight? Oh, so maybe looking at, like, overnight services? Is that the question?
Well, no, because it happened to my friend already. He's a retired veteran, and something happened to him overnight. And again, he didn't have a way really to get to the hospital, so his roommate took the chance of driving him to Lebanon. And he really didn't want him to do that because he doesn't own an insurance policy. So he wants to know exactly how can he, if something, God forbid, touch wood, it happened again at evening or even early in the morning or whatever, how would he be able to get to, you know, at Lancaster, or, sorry, Lebanon, excuse me, and see if they do a test or whatever and what takes place, and they'll tell him what takes, you know, if he's staying there or he's going to go home, how would he get there and how would he get home?
Does anybody have any thoughts for her?
Oh, Carol, this is Tim from Wisconsin. Those of us who work in transportation as centers and deliver a service, these kind of issues are what vex us, right? Especially around veterans, right? So
yeah.
There are a number of questions that would have to be answered, or that this consumer, your friend, would need to get answers to in order to fully understand what the options might be. Different veterans have different status within the VA system, and some of those statuses include reimbursement for travel to facilities, but it doesn't apply to everyone. Some regional VA systems have mobility managers, and they actually operate a transit program. I don't know if that's available in Pennsylvania, but it would be worth checking out. The resource to go to begin to get these answers would be the County Veterans Service Office, or VSO,
and expressed those concerns about what happens if I need to get to a hospital and it's in another county. What, you know, what would the veteran system, how would they respond to that? The final thing I'll say is that if someone's experiencing a medical issue, regardless of where they need to go to, you always have the option of calling an ambulance. You know, unfortunately, the ambulance will take you to the hospital and drop you off and leave you in the care of physicians and nurses, but they will not come and pick you up and take you back home.
Right, that's a pickle right there.
Right, right. And, you know, there are, and I, again, I'm not in Pennsylvania, so I don't know, but there are providers that operate what are called specialized medical vehicles. Those providers haul folks to and from medical facilities, so that could be another option to look at as to what's available in your local area. But issues involving veterans and medical complications, it can be really challenging because those services are often not next door to where our rural folks live in Wisconsin.
Well, like if he has an appointment or if he has to call 2 days in advance and already saying to have that lined up, because, again, if he's going there, again, yes, like you said, the reimbursement, yes, that's a different story, yes. But, yeah, I will look into that, Tim, but thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hey, thanks, Tim. And Tim Auer is in Pennsylvania, and she said, we have that specialized service in Pennsylvania that you need advance approval from the MA and the VA to use it.
What was it, the MA? What, I'm sorry, Tim?
He says that we have that specialized service in Pennsylvania, but you need advanced approval from MA and VA. I'm not sure, maybe Pam, if you don't mind elaborating on what on what MA is, and I can get that to the caller.
Mary, this is Tim. My guess is that that's what their Medicaid program is called. It's probably medical assistance. And that whole process.
Wrote it, yep.
and that whole process is called prior authorization, and it can be a real challenge.
Okay, that's good help. I appreciate everybody.
Hey, thank you, everyone. This is awesome. I love it when connections get made. Do we have any other thoughts or questions, comments? Again, you can press *2. We're getting close to the end of our call here, so we have time for probably about 2 more comments.
Mary?
Yes, hi.
It's Judy. Judy Sells, and I thought I was on the call earlier, and then Judy Shanley started talking, and I want to say I'm so glad she's on the call, because one of the things I wanted to mention relative to coordination at the local level, what some of us may not totally understand is this effort at coordinated access to transportation has been a federal initiative. And that, however, is implemented in each state in a different way. Texas process, because Texas is so large and conservative, they wanted to make sure local areas, local regions did their thing. What has happened over the past few years is there's been sort of a waxing and waning as far as federal support for that and state support for that. But I will tell you, I'm involved with the National Center for Mobility Management, which Judy Shanley spoke about. She's a co-director. I'm on the advisory committee. I will tell you, this is an extremely really well-organized effort. It is something that really, I know, helped me at my center and with the other centers in Texas and with our funding partners. What we learned on our call this week is that there's going to be a renewed effort on the federal government looking at coordinated access. So with that, they're also putting together a work group with different entities representing. I'm going to be asking, and I think this would be a great thing for April to follow up with, especially with the advocacy committee, is to seek representation on that. Because if we can have direct participation at the federal level on some of the policy decisions that are going to come up, which also mean funding decisions, I think it would be a great opportunity. So that's something that can be, you can access the National Mobility Management Center, as Judy spoke about. But that's going to be a really good opportunity, and it really does help be able to access funding.
Great. And Kathy Baker in Georgia says that she seconds your idea from the CART. So thank you so much for sharing that information. I think that's great. Does anybody else have any final questions or comments for anybody who's been talking today? You can press *2. We've got time for one more. And while folks are thinking about that, I did want to say, Tim Sheehan mentioned earlier that we would love to have any and all of you who are so knowledgeable join our Transportation Advocacy Committee. And if you are interested in that, you can email my director, who is Billy Altum, and that is B as in boy, W, Altum, A-L-T-O-M, as in Mary, at sbcglobal.net. And you can also find us on our website as well. And we would love to have all of you guys joining our committee, because I'm always amazed at the amount of information and knowledge that we get on these calls. So again, any other final comments from folks? Do our speakers have any final thoughts that they would like to share?
This is Joan. Thank you for the opportunity and the great conversation.
Thanks, Joan.
This is Melba, and I also want to thank everyone for participating. This has been wonderful to hear everyone and what their stories are.
This is Carol Riley. I want to thank you for all the help you gave us and everything, and the emails would be greatly appreciated if you could send us to it, because you and I looking together with Pam, if I can, with email.
Yeah. Okay, great, Pam. I will check in and see if Pam's able to get me her email. Great, any other thoughts? It looks like we have one more final thought, and then we'll close it out. Hi, you get to close the show.
Is this who? Am I on there?
You are on.
This is Pam Auer. I was just going to say that I'm with Center for Independent Living of Central PA.
Oh, thank you, Pam.
I used the card so it was easier to type, and I couldn't remember the star, too. So.
Okay, so that's perfect. Great. Well, you thanks for closing us out. And, again, we would appreciate it if any or all of you would like to join our Transportation Advocacy Committee. And this call and all of our calls are archived on our website. At www.april-rural.org, and we will get some resources from our speakers and others that were on the line. If you want to send me anything to share with the archive, again, that's mary.olson.mso.umt.edu. We would love to take any and all resources that you guys have in regards to transportation and put them along with our archives. With that, thanks again for calling in, and join us in a couple of weeks to talk about silks and youth engagement in our final conversation of this webinar series.